Today's episode, we'll be talking about Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief by Rick Riordan, and its many, many sequels. And then we're going to dissect the film adaptation.
Yeah. So on this episode, we're talking about the mistreatment of more qualified women, Uma Thurman, representation for neurodivergent children, and how Percy Jackson supports unionization. Find out more later on in this episode. I have been waiting my entire life to talk about this.
I was born for this.
We were literally born to record this episode of the podcast.
This is the only reason why we have the podcast.
In order to talk about
Percy Jackson.
Fuck me. This is the best book series. I think I genuinely read it about 5 times when I was a kid.
Look, we didn't read it again. Because we didn't need to. Because
no.
I know it off by heart.
Yes.
Okay? I know the dialogue. I know the scenes.
I know every single character and their dynamics.
Yeah.
It's impossible to forget because...
The blue hairbrush?
Oh, purple hairbrush, actually.
Oh,
Rachel Elizabeth, dear. See? Come on. That's just for those real fans out there.
You know who
we're talking about. Okay, so yes, we're talking about Percy Jackson today. Mostly the first one, The Lightning Thief.
So if you didn't know... Percy Jackson, we're talking as though you know and love and have read Percy Jackson, but for our listeners that may not have read it, essentially it's a book that follows Percy Jackson.
Yep.
And his kind of
ragtag team of friends
and their relationship to the Greek gods.
Yeah, because in this series, the Greek gods are real and all of the monsters are real, and I swear... Rick Riordan invented Greek mythology.
It didn't exist before this.
Before he wrote it, it didn't exist.
Nope.
He wrote it into existence.
And then they found all of the evidence for Greek mythology, but only after he did it.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's on that.
I'd also like to say that I minor in classics only because I loved Percy Jackson, and in first year I went, Greek mythology paper, count me in.
I genuinely remember before I started uni, I was like, hey, you know, I really love those Percy Jackson books. Maybe I should just study classics. And then my mum goes, it's mostly studying like pottery and shit. And I went,
oh my God, I will
do something else.
I've just remembered like the most embarrassing part of my high school experience is when I went to Timaru Girls High School.
Yeah.
Shout out TGHS. In year nine, I says, hey, can I do Latin by correspondence?
You asked to do Latin? Is this because of Percy Jackson?
Yeah. And they said, Amy, it's not really that relevant. Like,
it's a dead language.
It's a dead language. And I was like, you don't know that. I wouldn't be able to read the things because, like, blah, 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 blah. And Mum was like, you don't want to do Latin.
I could read the original Odyssey, Mum. Leave me alone.
I think the original Odyssey was actually in ancient Greek.
That would make sense. Then why did you want to learn Latin?
I just thought it was spicy. I don't know. I didn't learn Latin.
Yeah. But maybe in the future.
No, it's a dead language.
It's a dead language.
Plus, Percy Jackson's in English.
So true.
And 42 other languages.
Yeah, God. Just the best series. And you know what? He just keeps on spitting them out.
Churning them out. He's a machine.
He is literally a machine. I think there's, 5 different series at this point?
Yeah. So there's 2 series about Greek and Roman gods. And then there's one about... Is it Egyptian gods?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, I remember that one. The Cain Chronicles. I remember because I read... all 3 novels out loud to my little sister when we were growing up, which is actually pretty cute.
That's
in retrospect.
Really,
there's kind of nice brother-sister bonding, but it was for purely selfish reasons so I could read them again.
And you could hear your own voice.
And I could hear my own voice. And also, I was kind of old when I did this. So,
how old were you?
Let's not talk about that.
So, all in all, there's like 21 books that he's written in the main series. And he's also written, Rick Riordan, has written 29 related or not related books as well. So he's sitting on a good 50 books.
God, when did the first one come out? Like, how old were we?
I think the first one came out in 2005.
That is a lot of books to be released in 15 years, 16 years.
Well, some of them were before, but most of them were after. I'd say like 90% are Percy Jackson or godchild related.
Do you have any proof of that statistic?
Nope.
Just, that's just what you
I'm
vibe
just
with?
I'm just going out with the vibes, okay?
Yeah. But do you know what book he did not write? American Gods.
Okay, Neil Gaiman, if you're listening to this, just
stop.
Stop.
Stop it. Look,
Neil Gaiman's probably not listening to this.
And he probably is.
If you are, I really love your work and I think you're amazing. But
except American Gods.
I do think you stole American Gods from Percy Jackson.
He did. That is a total ripoff of Percy Jackson.
Well, the reason
why. Also, the TV show, fucking boring.
It was really
hated
boring.
It.
Book was good. But American Gods essentially, so Percy Jackson has like this thing where the Greek gods are kind of moving to wherever civilization is at its peak. So like during the ancient Greek times, they were in Greece.
Mm.
But now, like in the present day, they're in America, although I would dispute that now. I don't think they're...
Where would it be?
Melbourne.
Melbourne is the peak of civilization.
Am I wrong?
Yes. Have you seen the Foxton Mill?
No.
Oh, you're from South Island, you don't. My mum will get that joke.
Hey, Diana.
Hey, Di.
Anyway, so it like, goes on the assumption that the Greek gods are where a civilization is. That is the whole plot of American Gods, okay? And it's about gods.
Yeah.
And the gods exist.
There's just a lot more sex in it.
Yeah, that's true.
And also not just Greek gods, all the gods.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're not talking about that. We're talking about Percy Jackson.
There's 3 seasons of American Gods.
Ooh.
Three too many.
Yeah.
Loved the book though. Neil Gaiman, you're a G. Oh no, Charlie.
What?
American Gods came out before Percy Jackson.
We revoke all previous statements.
Neil Gaiman, very sorry.
Neil Gaiman, you're a king, and it turns out Rick Riordan
stole from you.
No, I honestly can't believe it. It was too important to me.
I feel really bad. Oh, wow, it's chat. Let's continue.
So when we were telling our friends that we were recording Percy Jackson, actually, I got a lot of I've never read the books, which...
Really?
Which I actually found as a personal attack on me and my childhood.
Yeah.
So I've blocked them all on social media, and then I asked some real friends what they thought, and we got some interesting takes. So I asked Anisha, my friend, whose birthday it actually is today, so
happy birthday, Anisha.
This is going to come out about a month after this, so.
Happy birthday, Anisha, for a month ago.
But she watched the movie first, and then she read the book,
and
she found it really disappointing and that it wasn't faithful to the source material
of the movie,
which is just ironic.
Bonnie, who's our producer, said just as we were about to record, we said, what's your hot take? She said, terrible, not all evil, but mostly evil.
And then she hated horny Hades.
Would beat up Logan Lerman as well.
Yeah. Stand by all 3 of those statements, to be honest. But
Bonnie has not actually read the book. She's only seen the movie.
This is all the film. The film is terrible.
It is terrible. Iconic, but terrible.
Our flatmate Alex, we asked him what he thought, and he just said...
He said, Grover.
He kind of didn't elaborate any more than that, so we're just going to leave it there. Thanks, Alex. So I need to talk about something.
Yeah.
And this is my fun fact for this episode.
Yeah.
And it actually makes me... I have so many conflicted emotions because I'm angry about it.
Yeah.
But I'm also excited about it. I'm confused about it. And I need to see it.
Oh, I need you to tell me what this is right now.
It's Percy Jackson, the Broadway musical.
Oh my God, that's right. It's what the fans have been waiting for. Finally, a truthful adaptation.
I just don't understand how you could turn it into a musical. And I need to see it to believe it.
Charlie, you watched it yesterday.
I only watched a bit.
You can find the whole thing on YouTube.
Yes, you can find the whole thing on YouTube. All 2 glorious hours of it.
If you search Percy Jackson the musical, it will come up.
Yeah.
Straight away.
Except the title of the YouTube video was weird. It said like Percy Jackson the Broadway musical, full musical.
On Broadway?
But no, it was like by Slime.
By Slime?
Or
did they slime them? Did
there was something to do with Slime, like Nickelodeon. Do you remember in Nickelodeon when everybody was slimed?
I remember feeling like an irrational fear of ever getting famous just because I didn't want to be slimed.
Yeah.
And that, kids, is why I'm not famous.
Because of the slime.
Because of the slime.
But can you imagine if you were going to a fun party and you got into your best frock, your lovely makeup, you got your hair did, and then you just got slimed?
You get slimed. What do you do after that?
I don't know.
It looks really viscous. It looks like it gets stuck in your hair and like it gets tangly.
Also, what now in New Zealand? Hello. They did the same thing to ordinary children.
No. I wonder what this slime smells like.
I wonder what the slime's up to now.
Slime, where are they now?
So do you have a fun fact for Percy Jackson, Amy?
It's not that fun.
Okay. Just a fact.
Just a fact. You got the musical fact.
Yeah, this is
And
true.
I do have some fun other things coming later in the show. But I would like to just establish that when I set up my first Facebook account in 2009, it came up with, what do you like? And the only thing I could think to search was Percy Jackson.
Yes.
And so for about 3 days there before I made friends with my mum on Facebook, the only thing on my Facebook feed was just Rick Riordan posting about his books. And it was a beautiful time and I miss it.
Take me back.
Like, social media was so positive then. For those 3 days.
For those 3 days, social media was finally positive. Okay, so when I was reading Percy Jackson, I genuinely thought that I was an expert on all things Greek mythology.
Me too.
In a way, I was.
I did get through my 100 level Greek mythology paper because I already knew all of the gods and their relationships to each other.
Yeah. Yeah. So it is incredibly educational, but I want to prove that I still have that knowledge just a little bit. Okay. So I've got in front of me a gods, goddesses, and Greek mythology quiz from Britannica. We're just going to do a few questions because I think there's like 15 and quite frankly too boring. But there is a timer on it. So this is going to be quick.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Lightning round.
Are you ready, Amy?
Yeah.
Okay. Which Greek hero was called Tamer of Horses? Alexander the Great, Hector, Apollo, or Paris? I'm going to go with Paris. I've got 3 seconds.
I think
okay, Paris. It was Hector. Okay. Which Greek hero was called Tamer? No, it's still going. Okay, sorry. Next question. In Greek mythology, who flew too close to the sun? Icarus. Oh, piece of cake. All right. Next question. Who was the chief god of the ancient Greeks? Minerva, Zeus, Apollo,
Zeus.
Hermes.
Zeus. That one's easy.
Who was the Greek goddess of the rainbow? Iris.
We'll
talk about her again later. How many gods lived on Mount Olympus?
12.
What is the name of the Greek goddess of the earth? Demeter? Gaia.
Gaia.
Okay, I'm bored of this.
Okay.
If you had to be god of anything, what do you think you'd be god of?
I'd be god of. I don't know, but I was thinking the other day it would be really nice if I could just like put my pinky finger in a glass of water and it became sparkling water. So I guess I'd be like
the god of sparkling water. That's pretty cool.
What would you be god of?
I don't know. I haven't really thought about it. I think like I would want to be the god of something that's pretty useful, but like that people kind of disregard a lot of times. So maybe
like a spatula.
Yeah, god of a strong whisk, not a weak whisk. I only want to be god of the strong whisks. You know,
we only have weak whisks.
We have weak whisks that are flat and
say weak whisk.
Weak
five
whisk.
Times.
Okay, you ready?
Weak whisk.
I can't do it. But yeah, I would be god of strong whisks and you would be god of
sparkling water.
God would be powerful. Okay, so moving on to the actual book. So I'm going to give you a little brief overview, but quite frankly, go and read them, okay?
Yeah.
I think that would still be good. They're not hard.
I have read them recently. They are still good.
It's kind of like Harry Potter. You can read them at any age.
Really can.
Oh, so good. Okay, so there's 5 books in the original series. There's The Lightning Thief, Sea of Monsters, Titan's Curse, Battle of the Labyrinth, and The Last Olympian. So we open the series with Percy, who's an ordinary 13-year-old boy. He gets attacked by his teacher, who is secretly a fury, who's
that
like
was
a
so
monster
scary.
Girl.
Yeah.
And
not a monster girl, a monster boss.
Sorry. Fury the monster boss. While they were on a field trip. So then his best friend Grover reveals that he is a half-goat boy called
a satyr.
Yeah. And that Percy is a demigod, and they set off to a mysterious camp. But en route, they are attacked by a minotaur, and Percy's mum gets killed. So the camp turns out to be one that is training demigods, who are like half-Greek god, half-mortal. And Percy learns that he is a son of Poseidon, who's the god of the sea. And this is, like, super rare, and everyone's, like, shook. They're like, what the hell? You people don't exist anymore.
Well, because they made a rule several years ago that the big three, Hades, Poseidon, and Zeus, weren't allowed to have mortal children anymore.
They had chastity belts.
No, they had chastity rings.
Did they really?
Like the Jonas Brothers. Sorry. The Jonas Brothers are Frankie Jonas' brothers.
The Bronte sisters. We're already tying in the other episodes. Okay, so then he finds out that Zeus thinks that Percy stole his lightning bolt, But Percy is like, nah, that wasn't me. And so he goes on a quest to find it with his new friend, Annabeth, and his old friend, Grover. Over the course of the books, these three friends go on many quests where they make new friends and new enemies, culminating in a final showdown between the gods and demigods and the titans and the bad demigods, including Luke, who's Percy.
Percy and the K.
Percy. Percy's arch nemesis. So that's kind of just like a brief rundown. That's basically just the first book and I guess the last one.
Well, we didn't really go into much of the plot of the first book.
Well, because the plot is like, it's very much a quest. It's like, go to location X and complete an activity there. Usually fighting something.
Yeah.
And then move on to this other area.
Well, it's interesting you say that because it really kind of reflects the thing that is like really prevalent in especially Greek mythology, but most mythology, which is like this idea of a hero's journey.
Mm.
And so essentially like each book, there's an overarching like plot throughout the five books, which is the gods versus the titans essentially. Yeah. But each kind of book follows its own hero's journey. So a hero's journey has like 10 pretty normal steps that kind of transcend culture. They're just normal stories.
Is this an English lit thing or a classics thing?
It's both.
Ah. Okay.
So first of all, there's a call to adventure.
Yes.
Okay, this is when the fury turns up.
Yeah.
So there's something that's pulling this seemingly normal person out of their world.
Yeah.
Then there's meeting a mentor, which is Chiron, who's a centaur, and also Grover. So we're getting a little bit more into this kind of hidden world that the hero is a part of but doesn't know that he is. Then number three is when you cross over into the threshold of the unknown, which is when he gets to the camp, right?
Yes.
And then they start going on it. And then number four is you attain a helper. In this case, it's Annabeth. We'll talk about her later.
Queen.
And then the next kind of few steps are, you know, just normal throughout the kind of quest, which is like they grow new skills. There's a symbolic death and rebirth. Then there's a revelation and climax. And then finally, the hero gets some kind of gift, which is normally...
Like a present?
Yeah, like a present from the gods.
What sort of present?
Anything. Anything at all.
What did Percy get?
Grover, because you remember how Grover doesn't get out of Hades because they don't have enough of Persephone's pearls, and so he asks for Grover back out of Hades. And then
I think it would have been cool if he got like, I don't know, a new iPod Touch or something.
He already had one. Watch the movie.
Yeah, no, he could have got the new edition by the time it was released.
True.
There were so many new ones.
Anyway, the final step is like a return to the known world, but you're forever changed. And this final step is like, so the hero's journey exists in a cycle, so it can keep going, which is why each new book in the series starts again from Percy being away from camp, right?
It's like Rick and Morty.
Yeah, I guess so. I haven't seen it.
Well, it is. Okay. So actually, you were just talking about Annabeth, and I just wanted to bring something up.
Okay.
Okay.
I already agree with you. You haven't said anything, and I already agree.
Yeah, and I just need to get this off my chest. This what I'm about to say applies to both Annabeth, but also Hermione from Harry Potter.
Also Kerry Chang from Cherub.
Yes, it does. It just applies to whenever there's a main lead character and then a far more capable side female character.
Who's brilliant.
Yeah, who's brilliant. Like, okay, so we're talking about Annabeth. So she is brilliant, she's talented, she's been training her entire life, mm-hmm. She's the most capable person at Camp Half-Blood, yep. She's the most skilled fighter, she's the smartest person.
Of Athena.
She's the daughter of Athena, and she is a hero in every single way that you can perceive word.
Yeah.
And yet...
Percy gets all the saves.
Percy gets all of the fucking glory.
Yep.
He gets to be called the fucking hero of the book, and it's just outrageous. Okay.
And also the whole time Annabeth just gets kind of labeled as like bossy and know-it-all, the same as Hermione. Like Annabeth has like these traditionally undervalued female strengths of like quick thinking, intelligence, solving things without violence. Can you think of any?
I don't know.
You're a man.
I'm a man, so I don't know anything about woman, to be quite honest.
But she I don't know, she just gets kind of railed for having these like good strengths. And then it's just like, oh, Percy, woohoo, Percy did it.
And yeah. It's also this weird thing of like, it's seen as a detriment that Annabeth has been training her entire life and Percy hasn't. And that's seen as something that is really good and beneficial and actually helps them, is the fact that he is underprepared to actually be undergoing any of the missions that he does.
I know. Like, he would die without her.
He would.
Like,
and
every
he
single
should.
Time. Okay. I also like, sorry.
No, you go.
I also like how Annabeth and Percy do not like each other to begin with. They are enemies to friends, to lovers.
Frenemies, if you will.
Frenemies.
Yeah.
And that tension is really, it's really hilarious. There's a lot of jokes.
Yeah.
There's a
These
lot of
are
teasing.
Funny books.
They're
I remember,
very funny books.
I remember giggling as a little boy.
Do you remember the damn jokes?
There were so many damn jokes. Grover is a laugh riot.
Yeah,
okay. He is.
So if you don't know, Rick Riordan woven references to dams as in, you know, hydroelectricity, just so he could make some really, really easy damn jokes.
Do you remember any of them?
No.
But trust us, they were funny.
They were real funny.
Okay, another thing that I need to talk about.
Yeah.
And I need to talk about it right now.
Okay.
Is Percy's rebound from his mother's death.
Yeah,
okay?
He did not grieve.
No, so basically as he's entering this camp, his mum dies. He has one day of training.
Yeah.
And then he's off on his quest and he's literally like, ha-ha! I love this camp. What an awesome place to be. And I love all of my new friends. And I'm so excited to go off on a quest.
And when I was a child, I was kind of like, hey, I get it. Like, you're going into this magical world where you find out, like, you are literally half God. And there's so many fun gadgets. And there's swords. And you have a pen that turns into a sword. But also, now I'm an adult, I would be like, I can't do anything. My mum's dead.
Yeah. Mental breakdown. Yep. Also, speaking of that pen into the sword, do you know how Rick Riordan came up with that idea?
How did he come up with that?
He was in a classroom pitching this idea to a group of kids, and he was like, but I don't know what I should do with the sword. And this one little kid just went, how about a pen? And he went, fucking genius, mate. I'm putting it in.
I loved that pen, and I loved that there was a caveat with the pen sword that it always returned to his pocket.
Yes.
Even if he lost the sword, he'd find the pen in his pocket and he would still have the sword. And I thought, that's how it should be.
But terrifying to have a pen sword in your pocket.
I always thought about the fact that if he clicked it while it was in his pocket, leg cut off.
Well, it's quite easy. It's quite easy to just sit down abnormally and then like have a little click a pen in your pocket. Leg snapped off. But he could totally have cut his leg off. He was not very... Work health and safety would have had a lot to say about this.
Oh, and he was not very cautious.
No, he was not cautious.
If anyone should have had, like, a pen that turned into a sword, it was
Annabeth. Okay.
But she just had the invisible baseball cap.
Lame.
Kind
she
of
deserves
cool,
this.
But, like, her mother is the god of battle strategy.
Yes.
She deserves a sword. Get Annabeth a sword. Percy really likes blue.
He does. But do you know what? It's funny because... He does.
it's brought up
throughout the whole book.
And like it's brought up in a way that it's like, it's accepted that his favourite colour is blue because his dad's Poseidon.
Yeah, like, he really establishes like that his favourite colour is blue.
Before there's any kind of character magic growth. Going on. No, like even just like, even before the Fury, like at the very start, he's talking about his mum who sometimes makes him blue cookies because he likes blue and gets some blue candy from the lolly shop she works at. And I remember reading that for the first time and being like, ha, okay.
He really likes the colour blue.
And then he gets to Camp Half-Blood and they're all kind of like talking about like the things that like mark him out as like a child of Poseidon. And he's like, oh my God, I love blue. And they're like, yeah, okay.
No one else does.
And then it's just like a motif throughout the entire books is like
that
Percy
he likes
just
the color
likes blue.
Blue.
And like at the very end of the books, I won't spoil the ending, but like they send out a signal that things have gone well. They light up the entire Empire State's building blue.
Because it's Percy's favorite color.
Yep.
Quite a successful motif in the end.
Well, it really stuck with us, didn't it?
Yeah. So I guess it was successful even though we're making fun of it.
Dyslexia and ADHD.
We need to talk about
it. We need to talk about
it. Okay, so in the books and in the movies, If you have dyslexia and ADHD, it's because you're a demigod.
It's because your brain's hardwired to read ancient Greek.
Yeah, and then you're ADHD because you're a warrior.
Because you need to have the reflexes of a fighter.
Yeah.
And I was actually looking into that because I think that's such a cool thing to put into a book, especially for kind of
children.
Yes. And also for like, it's the reading age, the books are kind of reading age for kids. Maybe when they like discover dyslexia, and then but then they're finding a representation of themselves where it's a strength.
Mm.
Like, I think that's really cool. But essentially, Rick put those into the books because his son Haley, who he made up the stories with and kind of for, had like recently been diagnosed with ADHD and dyslexia and was feeling really like
low
about it. And Rick was like, "You're just a demigod. Your brain was hardwired for ancient Greek, and you're a born fighter."
How fucking cool is that?
Really cool.
I wanted to have dyslexia and ADHD.
Me too. I remember being like, ow, it hurts to read with no glasses on and in the dark. Maybe I've got ADHD. And that's probably why I tried to take Latin.
I remember once, like, you know how when you read for so long that your eyesight becomes a little bit fuzzy?
Mm-hmm.
I remember going, Mum, I've got dyslexia.
I read
must be a demigod.
Greek.
And then I went, who's my real dad?
Who's my real dad?
But you know what? Speaking of like the gods, Rick Riordan stuffed these books with every single Greek god
that's ever been mentioned
in any myth ever. It's quite simply phenomenal.
You even get like Narcissus and Echo and
Iris, goddess of rainbows.
God, her house sounded amazing.
Oh, she is a queen.
So what are they? So they. This isn't like maybe the third book, I think.
Yeah.
Like they're kind of. I think they're in a cornfield, and there's like monsters, and they've like come to this beautiful like country house, and they go in there, and there's like a lovely woman, and she's like, "Hi, do you want to use my rainbow phone?"
Yeah, because they have little rainbow phones, and it's like a rainbow sheen that you can talk to
like
people through.
Like, it's kind of like in the Harry Potter, how they have the pensieve, but it's like that. It's like a pool of water with a rainbow coming out of it, and you put in your golden drachma. Drachma is Greek currency.
Coins.
They only use the golden drachma in the books.
You can tell that we really love these books.
Yeah, we really love these books.
But Iris, I would like to be a child of Iris.
I would love that.
How
cool. Aren't you?
Are all gay people children of Iris?
That's why everyone's so afraid of them. They're powerful.
Powerful.
I stand by that.
Oh my god. Well then what are you?
I don't know.
And you know what? So at the end of all of the books, we're talking about these minor gods that Rick Riordan decided to put in. And then sort of at the conclusion, this isn't a spoiler, but at the conclusion, Percy goes, "Oi, you need to make sure that all of the minor gods have got cabins at Camp Half-Blood."
Well, because they're at risk out in the world.
Exactly. They can be attacked by monsters. So they need the safe space to be able to train themselves up. And let me tell you, the Hypnost cabin, the god of sleep. Okay.
I think about that like bi-weekly, probably.
Yes.
When I'm tired, when I'm at the library, on the grind, if you will, and I go,
I need the
way they
cabin.
Described that cabin was just kind of like, Warm
hugs,
hardwood, and then like fluffy feathered duvets and cloud and like literally floating clouds.
Kind of what you think of when you think, "I just need to be in bed right now." That's kind of what you envision rather than an actual bed. Do you know what I mean?
It was like kind of dreams floating around. Like it was.
Oh.
Just read the book. You understand how we feel.
We really want to. Fuck, I want to be there. And just overall, the impact of the series, I don't think can be discussed enough. I mean, apart from all of the people that I talked to in preparation for this episode, everybody else our age has read these books.
Yeah, at least one or two of them.
Yeah.
And I think it's like a really smart way to kind of, I don't know, trick children into learning.
Yeah, because...
And like the kind of stuff that people that are not arts-minded don't deem as, I'm putting in quotation, important. You know, like classics is not really deemed that important. That's why they cut all the programs. But like the book kind of like incorporates all of these things that are like really big social ideas that still exist in like media today, like kind of Icarus. It's teaching you about what that was. And so when you see it later, when you're like 14 or whatever, you're like, oh, I know what that is. Like, haha. And I think it's like really empowering.
Yeah. And there's a lot of morals and themes that go along with all of those myths. And it's just like a really interesting retelling of basically every single important Greek myth that existed.
I mean,
and it's just cool.
You've got the labyrinth. You've got Argus, the many-eyed watcher.
You've got Medusa.
Yep.
You've got the Hydra.
You've got the Minotaur. You've got Ariadne and her red string.
Did you say Ariana Grande?
I wish.
Ariana Grande, the biggest villain of the third book. But they really just... It was just quite simply sensational.
I reckon the way that like he rendered the gods were in such a unique and fun-loving way.
Yeah.
Like they all really have their own personalities, which I think is kind of, you get to actually learn real classics at university and you realise the gods are really shitty people. Like they just kill people a lot and they just kind of have babies with people that they don't want to have babies with. It's not very good. But Rick Riordan really sets them up as like, cool and funky characters.
Yeah, like they are shown as really cool, but I also quite like in the book is when Percy does actually end up confronting his dad, being like, you should have told me that you were my father for 13 years. Like, I just thought that my dad had abandoned me.
Yeah.
And that you have that really,
and also they just
lethargic
sleepy.
Cathartic. You have that cathartic moment where he confronts his dad, being like, you caused me a lot of pain.
And like, you kind
and
of
that was like, that's pretty cool to put in a kid's
of
book.
Expect him, like, the expectation is that he will meet his father and be like, oh my god, I've missed you, like, blah blah blah. But Percy is like, no, you have been a shit dad to me, and I like wanted better, and I deserved better, and everybody else deserves better too.
Yeah, and he goes, prove to me that you're a real dad, don't just tell me that you are.
Yeah,
you know. Because do you know why? Family is more than just blood.
Shut up. No, shut up.
Family is more than blood. And quite frankly, this ties into Fast and the
Furious. Shut up.
That reference will only make sense if you
listen to
the Little Woman episode. Okay, but last thing I need to bring up. Okay, if we're talking about favourite characters, we weren't talking about favourite characters, but I want to talk about favourite characters. Artemis and her huntresses. I believe
Queens.
Book 3.
Yeah.
Queens. I wish that they just had the entire series about them.
Yeah, I know. Because they were just iconic.
They mean, do you know what we do? We just run around and we shoot men.
Do you remember when they had the Amazons as well?
What?
Do you remember that?
No.
Well, the Huntresses were going around doing some kind of quest or something, and Talia was around doing stuff. And then they had the Amazons, which there's actually like a reasonable amount of evidence that the Amazon women were real. Like, they've been finding skeletons recently. It's very new. I can't provide any citation. I'm really sorry.
You will find footnotes at the conclusion of this.
Just talk to Professor Sean McConnell in the classics department. He'll tell you.
Yeah. Okay.
But they go around and do quests, and then there's the Amazons, who are like, if you don't know, these tall, glorious women who just fight people, and they don't have any men, and they just have babies, and they're only women, and it just sounds iconic and idyllic.
But Artemis and her huntresses.
And I love how, like, Artemis is introduced, because, like, first you're introduced to Apollo. Apollo's just a dick. Like, he knows that he's handsome and that he glows like the sun. He's cocky. He's like, I drive the chariot of the skies. And Artemis is like, yeah, but I have a band of, like, badass bitches. And everyone's like, ooh, Artemis.
And she convinced Talia to give up her powers of, like, being the daughter of Zeus to go and join her fucking gang of huntresses.
I thought you were going to say give up her powers of being a tree.
I also need to talk about that before we move on. Hold on. So Artemis and her huntresses, yes, iconic. More iconic is the fact that a major character, Talia, is a tree for the first two books. And I just
love... And the backstory behind why she's a tree is really fascinating, and we won't go over it because, like,
it's fascinating and tragic and also kind of
a bit too much story.
But
she is a tree, and she wakes up and she's like, hey guys, like, woohoo, I'm 13. And they're like, you've been asleep for four years.
4 years.
And she's like, sorry, what?
Yeah. I just fucking love that. I think it's so funny. So I feel like, do you have anything else you want to bring up about the book specifically?
So I think this is a really good time to bring up a segment we want to try. Inspired by my brother, Seamus, he said to me, hey, you need to get on Reddit and go down a rabbit hole.
Yeah. And neither Amy nor I
had
are Reddit
been on
partakers.
Reddit. No. And when he said Reddit rabbit hole, I went, new segment. Okay. Yeah. So Reddit is kind of this like, because I actually didn't know what it was. It's kind of it's not like a social media, but it's like discussion boards.
Okay. I've definitely been on Reddit before, so I kind of know what it is.
Like, it's kind of like Pinterest.
I feel like it's a culture.
You discuss things. It is. It's kind of like you're either Tumblr.
You're really like into Reddit.
Or you're just
not.
And we're just not, which is why it's so funny to go in
and see
what's going on.
Yeah.
And so I did a little quick search. And to preface this, none of these discussion boards have been created like 10 years ago when the books came out. They've been created at least within the last 11 days.
Yeah, these are recent. And we're going to do this with every new episode where we just look up the books that we're discussing on Reddit and just see what's up.
We want to see the discourses that are going on.
Exactly, you know? Exactly. We're going to go down a Reddit rabbit hole every week. So one of the things we found was, as I was talking about before, there's a musical. And we actually found a review on Reddit by Arthur Dracon. And the headline says, "The Lightning Thief. The Percy Jackson musical is just the adaptation the Percy Jackson fandom has been waiting for. This is my review."
Full stop at the full end of the stop. Review as well.
Okay, so here was his review.
So I've got a few highlights, not the whole thing because it is quite long.
Extensive. He went in depth.
He went in depth, and he also said at the end of it, he said, "If you want to know more, go to my personal blog."
Or just go to YouTube.
True.
The whole show's on YouTube.
The funniest thing is I would not consider myself part of the Percy Jackson fandom, but obviously we care about it a lot, and we did not know this existed.
No.
But
I'm
anyway,
embarrassed, actually.
Some highlights is, how do I even begin to describe what this musical means to the Percy Jackson fandom? This musical was everything that the, in quotations, movies could and should have been. There was love and dedication in every single song and every bit of writing.
He's so right, though.
I know.
There was no love and dedication in the movie.
This sounds like we're making fun of Arthur, but he's probably
no, we're
right.
Not.
We love you, right. Arthur. Thank you for this content.
Yeah.
And then to finish it off, this was the last paragraph, okay? So, here's to you, Lightning Thief, the little musical with big dreams, from humble beginnings to Broadway proper. Shame it got robbed at the Tonys. But that's hardly the only bad call they've ever made. And I quit giving a damn about them long ago.
Percy Jackson, the musical, was fucking snubbed at the Tonys. Spread the word, people. I'm over this.
I'm over it.
Where's
the representation?
This. I've totally lost respect from with the Tonys.
So the other two titles I wanted to bring up was, this one's in all capital letters, okay? And I'll try and do it justice in my performance. Does Percy Jackson have a Mediterranean complexion?
Asking the real questions, though. Who's
and
to say?
The intro to that is, "Hello all," full stop. I tried to find out if Percy Jackson had a Mediterranean complexion. For some reason, everybody seems to think this. So to try and find it out, I did the only reasonable thing. I ran a Google search. Hey.
Who knows how that went?
You can find out.
Did you find out?
No.
Does he have a Mediterranean complexion?
I think that it's inconclusive.
Okay. That's not very interesting.
I thought he had a Mediterranean complexion.
I hadn't really thought about
it. But also, like, who wouldn't want one, so.
But the problem with movies is, like, now I can only see Logan Lerman.
Yeah, but imagine him with a Mediterranean complexion.
Much better.
Yeah, true. Finally, my absolute favourite one. I don't even think I'm going to explain this. We'll just let it sit with you. Percy Jackson supports unionisation.
We're going to move on now. Yeah. I think it's good to just let that final quote
really
fester.
Sink in. Okay.
Sink in. Think about what they're actually saying there.
Percy Jackson supports unionisation. Cool. Thank you. Reddit. Let us know if you liked the Reddit rabbit hole segment.
Yeah, because
we liked it.
We liked it. Okay, so now we're moving on to the kind of iconic yet terrible
absolutely
movie.
Horrific.
Terrible.
But really captured the zeitgeist.
It really did. So we're just going to run through some movie quotes.
Yeah,
okay.
We watched it recently.
Yeah.
Here are our favourites.
Yeah. So one of them is, "It's like high school without the musical. Okay.
That's a real good one. This one is when Kyron gives Percy the special pen that we were talking about, okay? And he says, "It's a powerful weapon. Guard it well. Only use it in times of severe distress." And then what is
should
Percy?
I be Percy?
Yeah, you should be Percy.
This is a pen. This is a pen.
So true. This one's from Grover. Okay, most of these are from Grover because he is iconically funny.
Laugh out loud. A riot.
Is it me or is it raining cows?
I assume this is from when the Minotaur arrives.
I think so.
It makes sense.
But it doesn't make sense because their car flips. The cows don't go anywhere.
What?
Doesn't matter.
The next one. You're half donkey, I'm half goat. Obviously spoken by Grover. Yeah. Don't know who he was talking to, though. No one's half donkey.
Here's this one. That's why your mother married your stepfather. His pungent odour masked your smell.
I need to talk about this right now. Okay. I can't believe that we haven't talked about
the Gabe's fact punching over.
Smelly Gabe. Okay, so
we shouldn't laugh.
So Percy Jackson's mum marries this man called Gabe,
okay, so
who is genuinely abusive and an awful person.
Inflicting trauma.
Yeah, yeah. But it's revealed during the first book.
So we have to establish that demigods are really smelly.
Well, because it's dangerous. The reason why they need to go to Camp Half-Blood is because it's safe there, because the monsters can smell the demigods and they'll attack them.
Yeah.
So in order to stop that, Percy's mum married Gabe, who was really, really smelly. She is the best mother ever. So fucking funny.
Smelly Gabe, fuck you.
Smelly Gabe, massive fuck you. Okay, I guess the final quote is, "You're burning money. We're in a recession."
Shut up.
And honestly, that sounds like an interaction that me and Amy would have on a day-to-day basis. So yeah, we're talking about the movie now. And yeah, it is shit, but they got one thing right.
The casting.
The casting is quite simply sensational. I think that every single casting decision was perfect.
Look, I'd like them to remake the movie, but I'd like them to keep all of the cast members.
Yeah.
And just write it better.
Yeah. I don't think many of them can play 13-year-old children anymore. But,
no.
But I'm willing to set aside...
But Pierce Brosnan is Kyron.
Okay.
Okay.
Phenomenal.
Phenomenal.
Honestly, Logan Lerman as Percy, he's kind of great.
He doesn't look muscly enough to actually be a demigod, though.
No, he doesn't. But he does look sexy now, though.
His hair looks real bad in the movie. He is so sexy now. Google him right now. Logan Lerman. Logan Lerman 2020. Okay, there's a photo of him. He's gone prematurely grey. It looks amazing.
Yeah. I want to go prematurely grey now.
There's a photo of him. He surfaced on the internet after about 10 years hiatus. Him going for a walk, just having taken off his COVID mask and just looking back at the camera.
Windswept
salt and pepper hair. Like, I'm not saying he needs to be Percy again. I'm saying he needs to be Poseidon. You know what I mean?
Oh my God, you're so right. But they can actually just all be the gods. I don't know who was Annabeth, but she would be a great
Alexandra
Athena.
Alexandra Daddario. She would be a great Athena.
She would.
And also, or Venus.
Mmm. Okay.
But I would also like to say that Zeus as Sean Bean.
That was an inspired casting
Sean
choice.
Sean Bean, in his famous roles, is Zeus first, then Ned Stark second. And I will not fight me on that.
Yeah, and I have to say, my top casting decision that I don't think can be topped is Uma Thurman as Medusa. Come on now. Who else could be Medusa?
And such a small role for her. Like, she's famous.
But she had so much charisma and character in that one scene.
I could simply never imagine anyone else.
No,
like,
I couldn't.
In the reboot that they're making, they have to get her back.
Also, just copy and paste that one scene.
Yeah,
I'm willing to give up continuity.
So that scene, we have talked about, me and Charlie, at length about how that captures the zeitgeist. That scene just really is. But like, talk to anyone who was like 13 in 2013 and they will be like, that scene.
And it was so like of its time for one specific little tweak that they had to the myth.
So what's going on is they're trying to get these these pearls, right, to get to get back from Hades. They know that one's at this place called Auntie M's Emporium. And they're there, and there's all of these weird, creepy statues. And they're like, what the fuck is going on here? And then this charismatic woman with a with a black headpiece on and glasses.
A turban.
So a charismatic woman. She's her hair and eyes are covered, okay? And she's like, Percy Jackson, I want to fight you because your father fucked me over.
Yeah.
And he's like, sorry, how do you know who I am? And then it clicks. It clicks with Annabeth, of course.
Of course it does, because she is the main character.
And she goes, oh my God, this is Medusa. And Medusa whips off her hair covering and her glasses, and she has snakes for hair.
To reveal a beautifully proportioned head of snakes.
Oh, it's
like,
gorgeous.
It's like a lovely
CGI
little globe.
The CGI was really lovely.
And the snakes,
scary.
The snakes
okay?
are so like pretty and small and like... It sounds so nice.
And so anyway, they're running around, right? They've been like split up. So Grover, Annabeth, Percy, they're running around different places trying to escape her, but also they can't look around the corners, right? Because they might see her, make eye contact, and turn into stone.
Yeah.
So what does Percy Jackson do?
Okay, very smart move.
So do you remember iPod touches, right?
First gen,
and do you remember how they had a mirrored back? I do.
and so Percy
Jackson takes his iPod Touch. Why is he bringing his iPod Touch on a quest? Don't know. Isn't mentioned at all in any of the rest of the movie. He takes the iPod Touch out of his pocket and he puts it around the corner and he sees that Medusa is coming. And then Annabeth crashes through the wall with a truck. That's irrelevant. But it's the iPod Touch.
The iPod Touch using as a
kind
mirror?
Of convex mirror.
Brilliant.
Like they have on the pin turns, you know, on roads and stuff.
Oh, so smart. And you know what? Just an all-round phenomenal scene.
Yeah.
But there was one other.
Oh, wait, I do want to say one last thing.
What else do you want to say?
It was such a scary scene when I was 13.
Well, just when you were 13?
Still now.
Scary now.
Yeah, you're right. And our flatmate Lulu said to me when I said, how did you feel about the Percy Jackson movie? And she said, the scene with the iPod Touch fucking sent me.
Yeah, and it did.
And it did. It sent me too.
Sent me anyway, to space. The other scene that I wanted to talk about is the Lotus Flower Hotel and Casino scene.
Yep.
Because I swear to God... When I watched that scene as a little kid and all of the colours become
kind of blurry,
really
and
blurry. Yeah, and then there's the scenes of like showing all their faces being like, whoa.
And Lady Gaga's poker face comes off.
Yeah. And you know what? I was like, This is what drugs, alcohol and partying and clubbing is like.
Yeah.
And it kinda
is. It kinda is.
Everything goes blurry.
Not, yeah.
Lady Gaga usually comes on at some
point.
And you
can't escape.
How do they escape in the end?
Percy Jackson hears his father's voice talking to him. Said, Percy, don't eat the lotus flower. And then he doesn't. Oh. And then they figure out that he's not eating the lotus flower. And they're like, and they're into their little walkie-talkies. And they're like, Percy Jackson has woken up, is what they say.
Oh, that's scary.
And then they
like
have to
cult.
Run around and they have to kind of try.
I remember
and
they get the car. They steal the car.
Do you remember how Grover gets his hoofs painted? He has a manicure on his hoofs.
I do remember that.
Go, Grover. He deserves
it. Oh, my God.
It. He's
he
such
does
a good guy.
It. Okay. As you can see, Amy and I feel very passionately about Percy Jackson, both the book and the movie.
How did you feel about the second movie?
No. The second movie, I purposely didn't want to talk about it because it's
I'm
that
sorry,
fucking
I
trash.
I had to bring it up. It doesn't exist, quite
It doesn't
frankly.
Exist. I'm not talking. I'm actually not going to talk about
but
it.
But I do want to say that that Stanley Tucci is Dionysus. I fully endorse that wholeheartedly. Yeah. But the movie itself doesn't exist.
Just go on IMDb to find that out. Yeah. Don't watch the movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Seriously. I've never been more disappointed in my entire life. I am excited for the Netflix TV show. It is going to be
for children,
but I will be watching every single goddamn episode.
Yes.
Is it on Netflix? Maybe. Probably.
I think it's Disney. I think it's been bought by Disney.
Disney Plus.
What god do you think I would be the demigod of? Like, who do you think would be my godfather?
Well, we've already talked about that I'm the son of Iris.
Yeah.
Right? Because...
Gay.
You would be... I reckon you would be the daughter of Aphrodite.
Oh, shut up.
No, I think you would be... I think you would be the daughter of Hestia.
Okay.
Do you know why?
Why?
Because she's like the goddess of the hearth, of home life, of... And I just feel like you really thrive in a home setting. You're very warm, you're very comforting.
Are you saying I have agoraphobia? That's a callback to episode one.
I wouldn't say that about you, okay? I would never impose agoraphobia upon you. But you are just very, like, welcoming and warm and kind. And so I feel like that actually lends itself quite well to Hestia's characteristics.
I think that's nice, but it does show you know nothing about classics because Hestia is perpetually 12 years old and a virgin.
12 years old?
Yep. She never ages.
How old are you again?
13.
Why? What god do you think you'd be the child of?
Hades. Oh. My goth girl boss.
No.
No. Maybe Athena.
Ugh.
Is there a god of art?
That's what I was trying to think of. Apollo?
Anyway, thanks for tuning in.
What about one of the muses? I don't know.
I think the muses are also virgins. Like, it's... Anyway.
If you have any ideas, let us know. We're really struggling to come up with a god for Amy to be the daughter of. Okay, so now it's time to move on to...
And now for the part of the show where Charlie and Amy literally judge a book by its cover.
That's right. It's judge a book by its cover time. So that's where we judge a book by its cover. Today... We have got a book called Woman of a Certain Rage by Liz... Oh. Bursky? Liz Bursky. Okay. And it's... Okay, immediately,
I fucking love
the cover.
Life stories introduced by Liz Bursky. Maybe it's a collection of short stories by women.
Oh, maybe.
We don't know. We're only judging it by its cover.
I wish we could find out.
I'm going to explain what the cover looks like before Charlie says what he thinks. Although, if you're a keen listener, you would have already heard. So, on the cover, we have kind of a floral arrangement.
No, they're blossoming cacti.
Let me get there. Oh. It initially looks like kind of a floral arrangement, but then you realise that they're blossoming cacti. So, there's all of these kind of needles and like... kind of fleshy cactus thingies. And the colour palette is lovely. There's kind of like a sage green and like a kind of an aquamarine, if you will, and a peach and some kind of other reds and oranges. I love it.
It's utter delight.
And then the back
I want my
cover,
whole life to look to have this colour palette.
The back cover is just a very strong deep pink, which I love.
Hold on. It is a collection of short stories because it's got a list of a lot of names. I just assume that means it's
okay, so the blurb says, this book is the result of what happened when Liz Bursky asked 20 Australian women from widely different backgrounds, races, beliefs and identities to take up the challenge of writing about rage. The honesty, passion, courage and humour of their very personal stories is energising and inspiring. If you have ever felt the full force of anger and wondered at its power, then this book is for you. 10 out of 10.
10 out of 10. I fucking love it. Okay, the back cover, the little blurb, sounds phenomenal.
Yeah.
The colour palette and just the photo. That photo is fucking beautiful.
It's lovely.
I also love the typography.
Yeah.
And I love that it almost looks like... So, like, some of the words are covered by the plants, but some of them are more dominant. Like, rage isn't covered at all.
And obviously there's
And woman isn't covered at all. It's only obvious. Oh, it's amazing.
But, and then there's that kind of play on words of, you know, women of a certain age. You know how people say that. But, you know, they're twisting it by saying women of a certain rage.
Because it's just a phenomenal...
Look, you can buy it at UBS. Go down to UBS.
Great title. Great colour scheme. Great photo. 10 out of 10.
That is our first official... 10 out of 10.
I think it's actually the first one we've genuinely enjoyed. We always roast the other ones.
Well, the rugby one was a bit of a hard sell.
The rugby one was stupid.
So lovely to have a 10 out, our first 10 out of 10 and a ubiquitous 10 out of 10 for our last Judge a Book by Its Cover for the season.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't say this on from the outset of the episode, but yeah, this is our season finale.
We're taking a little break
because we are university students, so we have exams.
And we actually do have some required reading.
We genuinely do have required reading we need to go do. But if there's any books that you want us to talk about, flick us a message, let us know, because we've also got about 3 weeks of holidays, mm-hmm. and I can read at least a quarter of a book in that time.
Yeah, me too.
So
at least 25 words.
Together we can read half a book, and we can talk about that half in the next season.
So make sure to follow the podcast so you know when the next one comes out,
yep.
and follow us on Instagram.
Instagram.
Required_reading.
Apple Podcasts. Spotify. Everywhere. Hey, it's been a really awesome first season.
I'd like to say a big thank you, everyone.
Thank you, everyone, and especially Radio 1.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. That's enough. All right, bye-bye. Love you.
That was a Radio 1 91 event podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.